Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm HHCN editor Andrew Donlin. Today we're talking to Andrew Parker, the CEO of Papa, the at-home senior companionship startup that reached unicorn status in all 50 states in just about 4 years' time. Parker and I sat down to talk about that growth, the company's difficult decision to lay off 15% of its workforce last month, and what the future holds for the company. Before we get into that discussion, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Home Care Homebase. It's time to give Home Care Homebase another look. The same HCHB solution used by today's leading home health and hospice agencies to drive consistent growth and exceptional patient care is now more affordable than ever. There's never been a better time to take a look at Home Care Homebase. To learn how HCHB can help you scale up efficiency while scaling down cost, visit hchb.com today. Okay, Andrew, just first, in case our audience does not know, would love to get your background and how you got into the startup space in the first place and ultimately Papa.
So thanks for having me on today. I am Andrew Parker, founder and CEO of Papa. I started Papa originally about 5 years ago for personal need. My grandfather, who we called Papa, needed companionship and assistance. He really needed me, frankly, but I was busy working and doing other things. And so we thought it would be interesting to pair him with a youthful, energetic version of myself and another me. And I put on Facebook, who wants to be a pal to my Papa? It was not a business idea. It was a way to solve his personal need. And what's surprising me is my grandfather loved it. He didn't like much, let alone a stranger coming into the home. And that was a big aha moment for me, realizing we can empower a new kind of care built on human connection.
So how did it ultimately become a business idea? And when did you think, you know, this can actually work at a larger scale?
So tested it with my grandfather in a very manual way, tested it with other people, my friends, grandparents, and people that I met in my neighborhood and things like that. And then this was about 8 months before I actually decided to turn it into a real business. So just more of like a fun, helpful, like interesting thing. And then in May of 2017, at the time I was working at a telehealth company called MD Live, which I was part of the founding team of. So learned a lot there, learned a lot about health tech and selling into insurance. And I thought, you know what? I have this cool thing, Papa. It's just been like a fun little idea, but I really recognized that the 10 people that used it absolutely loved it. I read this Y Combinator article that said, if you could get, I think it said 100, but I took 10 and said, if you could get 100 people that absolutely love your product versus a million that don't really care that much, but still looked at it, it's a much more exciting business. And so for me, that was enough spark. I left MD Live to start Papa full time in May of 2017. I met my co-founder, Alfredo Vimonde, who's runs operations at Papa today. And in January 2018, we launched as a consumer service in the South Florida area, and then quickly started working with health plans about 10 months later in October. For me, it was a natural evolution. My background is in health plan sales and employer distribution. And so it was just more of a natural understanding. And then Medicare changed the rules to allow for companionship. And it was just very serendipitous. And we've been going full throttle ever since.
Yeah, so you mentioned the companionship piece and how sort of those regulations changed. Can you explain to the audience sort of what the business model is for Papa at this point?
Yeah, so Papa generally charges a capitation to our health plan partners. We work with over 100 managed care organizations across the United States. We're available in all 50 states, including Puerto Rico, which we are opening up in January. And the health plans buy Papa as a benefit to their members, and they pay us a per member per month, depending on many different factors, but effectively enough to cover the cost of a PAL and other kind of ancillary services and technology that we bring to bear.
So how many health plan partnerships do you have at this point?
Over 100.
Okay. Okay, great. Okay.
So pretty much every large payer, a lot of regional payers, I think there's something like 350 payers in the country. So we're working our way to supporting everyone through health plans.
So obviously you just mentioned you became open to consumers in early 2018. Did you ever imagine that you'd be in 50 states and partnered with that many plans so in such a short time period after that?
I was reflecting on that earlier. It's interesting. I don't know that I always thought about like what's going to happen 5 years out. I always had a vision of a new kind of care built on human connection, really a world where no one has to go at it alone. And loneliness was always something that I thought about. And I thought it could be used in all 50 states, of course. I don't know that I expected it to expand this rapidly, but by partnering with health plans, having demand in areas, it allowed us to expand. And then today we are in 50 states. We have PALs that can support a member in pretty much every county in the United States. And I believe we may be the only marketplace that can do that, send a human being into the home within a short period of time to support older people. And now we also support families, really focused on the family caregiver. So I don't know that I expected it to happen that fast. I'm very proud of it, but we're just getting started.
Have you noticed that health plans' attitude has changed when it comes to this sort of service? Are they more willing to engage than maybe they were early on in 2018? Obviously, the notoriety around Papa is a lot more now, but just in general, do you find that they're a little bit more flexible?
So I do think in general, health plans are thinking about more flexible benefits to be able to support their members in unique ways. I think health plans generally have gotten good at managing medical loss ratio and providing clinical services. But when 80% of health outcomes are driven by social drivers of health, you know, depending on how you're looking at it, it's just obvious that you need to think outside of that small portion of window, which is mostly clinical. And so I would say, yes, that health plans are more adaptable to benefits like PAPA or even benefits that are different. One, health plans are more competitive than ever. Medicare Advantage is growing considerably year over year. I think it's a 9% year over year growth. And you have to think about unique ways to support members. One, to keep them retained and engaged. Two, to lower total cost of care. And three, to improve quality scores, all of which PAPA does. And I think we have this configurable platform and configurable people, which are non-clinical, but with the fact that most things are non-clinical, it's allowed us to be very successful so far in growing through the health plans. And again, we're just getting started here.
Just a quick follow-up to that. So obviously health plans love data and they love partners who show them that it's actually working for the member. When did you start really capturing that data that could show the plans that it is helping outcomes, it is helping member retention and things like that?
So we've been doing it the whole time, but as you know, and the readers know, you know, data takes time, especially in health plans. PAPA's been around for about 4.5 years. We've been working with health plans for over 3 years, and we're starting to get really exciting data. Just a few things to highlight. 69% reported a significant reduction in loneliness after using PAPA. 39% reported no longer being lonely at all, which is huge because loneliness has a negative effect on your life. These are really generally social issues. As I mentioned earlier, loneliness is linked to increased risk of heart disease, stroke, diabetes, depression, and dementia, just typical things that could happen to individuals, but are driven faster and more beyond where it would be due to the loneliness and social issues that these members have. And it is said to cost over $6.7 billion annually to Medicare. And that's just thinking about the loneliness alone. We're also doing things like helping people get to their doctor more often or in an appropriate cadence, getting them, you know, to their medicine, making sure they're getting medicine, making sure they're getting groceries. So helping them with social gaps as well as clinical gaps, which we more navigate than actually provide those services. We do have some very exciting research forthcoming that shows a direct, really positive impact on cost savings as it relates to total cost reduction, as well as ED reduction, as well as improvement in readmission. I can't announce that yet, but we will have a study coming up very soon, which took a few years to be able to get the data. And so it's all coming to fruition now.
Sounds great. And then, so I believe you and I spoke maybe, you know, a day after COVID really hit the fan here in the US. And I think that was around the time that you were sort of shifting your model, and it just, again, was sort of serendipitous with that. Can you explain how the model shifted or how you took the company in a slightly different direction at that point?
So I would just say more it was an enhancement. PAPA's primarily in-person visits. During COVID, we became pretty much 100% virtual visits. We would do phone calls or video interactions with members. During this time, they were willing to, more than ever before, learn new technologies. What I find and what PAPA really believes in as a company is that these are not individuals that can't use technology. It's just a matter of caring for them and sitting with them and spending time with them. A lot of these things are meant to be simple for all age groups. It's more about, you know, showing them the way and caring. And so during this time, we had some success there. We did mostly virtual, and now it's really become part of our business. We do in-person visits, we do virtual visits. We provide what we call assistance from a distance. So we will literally go and pick up medicine for you. We'll pick up food for you. We'll take it to your house. Really, we're there to be a companion, and that falls into a lot of nuanced needs. And so to be able to support someone while you're with them or while you're not with them, we think is a very critical component. It is important to have both, and that's what we do now. And our platform is a key component of that. It also allows us to capture data in a usable and valuable way that's interesting to health plans, but also allows us to inform what the next visit should be. If I go into your home and identify you are at fall risk because your house is a disaster, there's mess everywhere, there's cords, there's, you know, leaks, things like that, which is more common than you would expect, we can capture that data. You know, we could share it with the plan, which we do, but it's better to actually share it with the next pal who comes over the next visit. And one of their focuses is to, you know, remove some of the clutter, help with some of the fall risk, and then share with the health plan that we helped with these things. So tracking and reporting on things has become very critical. And we're able to do that virtually and in person, really in a longitudinal record of what's been going on with a member during their experience with Hoplite.
Is there any emphasis on maintaining a certain amount of in-person visits? Because I know a lot of companies really, you know, due to necessity, went heavy on telehealth during, you know, the height of COVID, but have kind of drawn back a little bit to make sure there is still that human touch and in-person element. Is that something you guys have considered?
No, I want to just be clear. In-person is core to our business. That's right. What we do. Mm-hmm. About 85% of our visits are done in-person. Virtual is more like an ancillary kind of support for what's going on in an in-person visit.
Right.
We also do assessments virtually to make sure people are improving, their scores are getting better, they're having a good experience with Popo or with their health plan. And we kind of customize those depending on the program. So virtual is a component of what we do, but it is not the number one thing we do. In-person visits will always be top of, you know, kind of the priority list.
Okay, and drawing back to the beginning of the conversation, what drew you to the idea of home-based care in the first place? Obviously, you had the personal experience, but was there something when you were doing research prior to launching Papa that drew you to the idea of the aging-in-place marketplace?
Well, for me, the personal experience obviously was a big one. The second thing was my experience at MD Live. And I always had this dream of them at MD Live of this like sales force of telehealth. And it kind of frustrated me, frankly. I love MD Live. It's been a big part of my life. But back then, you know, technology was different. There was no FaceTime. You know, there's no Zoom. We had to build everything ourselves, which made it, you know, much more complex. But I did think there was an opportunity to combine in-person clinical services and virtual clinical services. And we built this connected care model there where we partnered with health systems that allowed to provide in-person and we did virtual. I really loved that concept. And then when I came up, just the idea of supporting people virtually in person and partnering, you know, in a local community type of a way. And then when I saw this need my grandpa had, it kind of like was this moment where I'm like, oh, we could actually create a configurable system that could support varying needs, but remove the clinical aspect and really help people socially. Then we could get in the home, which is really the holy grail. And we have this trust and bond. And the data that we're able to capture is bar none. Like, we are sitting on a gold mine of positive information to be able to help members in ways that, frankly, the health plans don't know without us. We really allow health plans to be proactive versus almost everything in healthcare is reactive. We've heard healthcare, we've heard people call it sick care. And frankly, we're trying to move it up the ladder, you know, down the path of being much more proactive and helping people before they're sick, kind of in this pre-care arrangement. And so, and, you know, combining the personal experience, what I learned at MD Live, and just realizing that there's a shortage of care across America, and we need to enable a new kind of care. And we've done that with our platform and with our people in the house.
And do you think the seniors have changed over time, especially after COVID? Do you see in general, they're more tech savvy, they're more willing to engage on these platforms?
So I'd say yes. It's highly dependent. I heard someone recently say, if you met one 80-year-old, you met one 80-year-old. They don't, you know, it's kind of interesting. We have like different age brackets, and then you're a senior, which is like 45 years-ish, depending on how healthy you are. That would be like comparing me to someone, I'm not even 45 years old. So like someone that is so much younger than me, and obviously we're not going to have the same needs and approach. So that's how I think about older adults. It's personalized. It's unique. I do think generally there has been an enhancement of their interest, and interest drives a lot of ability to do engagement. So I would say yes, there's still older people that are stuck in their ways. There's ones that are more innovative. My, you know, just looking at my two grandmothers, one was the most tech-enabled, like group thinker, or not group thinker, was, you know, building out group programs with her friends and going bowling, and the other, you know, uses a dumb phone and can barely turn on the TV, and it's more about what they're interested in. So, and they're the exact same age. So for us, it's more about supporting the member in the way that they feel most comfortable. If they want to learn, we're happy to help them. If they're happy with the 1-800 number, we're also happy with that as well.
No, that's a great point. Okay, and so what do you think has been the overall impact of Papa since it was launched? I really feel like, you know, it's sort of changed the larger industry. I feel like, you know, it's a very notable brand at this point. Is that something that you feel, and is it something that you think has had an effect on the larger healthcare industry?
Well, from Home Healthcare News, if you're saying that, that's a pretty big answer, I think, in itself. We really appreciate that. I mean, this has been my dream, obviously. And building this company with other people at Papa has just been such a great honor. I do feel we've changed the industry. We did create a companionship concept. We are category creators and leaders. And it's something we don't talk about it in that way that much, because we're trying to be humble and focus and, you know, help older people and families and enrich pals and, of course, our own team members. But I'm proud of the brand that we built. And, you know, my grandpa would be proud of the brand we built. He was an entrepreneur as well. And my father's an entrepreneur, so it runs my family, I guess. So, yeah. Answer is yes. It's been very exciting, and we want to continue to do that. And it's been one exciting thing for me is the influence that I feel that Papa has had on other startups. I don't think that the kind of elder tech space, as our friend Alexis Ohanian would call it, historically was as attractive to the venture community, as attractive to, you know, it's Silicon Valley, which is now more distributed. And I do think Papa helped to move the needle on that. I'm hearing students in college at, you know, some of the top schools in the world are using Papa as their thesis paper, doing projects on it. It's just such an honor. So yeah, I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, and that's certainly changed over the last 5 years. There's definitely a lot of money coming into the space where maybe that wasn't the case originally. So has the value proposition changed for Papa as you approach health plans over the last few years? Is it any different, or is it the same, just with more data backing it, with more use cases backing it?
It's more the latter. So it's always and will always be companionship. We are not going into someone's house to do a 10-point inspection of their home. We are not here to give them an in-home health assessment. We are not a clinical organization. We are a company that provides friendship effectively. During those companionship visits, if we identify things and we can help members in more ways, there are many use cases that a human being that's tech-enabled that cares can do. And that's kind of what we're going down the path to make sure we could do that in a way that's portable, manageable. We could track it continuously. We get credit for it with the health plans. Members want it. But for the most part, it's the same value. However, we're starting to get data on, we're reducing ED visits, we're improving member satisfaction, which is important as it relates to star ratings for the health plans and many other, and reducing total cost of care. So that may include us doing something that is critically important, like helping someone schedule their annual wellness visit, like making sure someone knows about their meal plan benefit, like navigating them into a behavioral health service. And that's mostly just under the responsibility of the guise of, we are companions. And as a companion, if we recognize something that you need, we're here to help.
Okay. And then taking a step back, so obviously there's been more money coming into the space, as we just noted. But at the same time, there's a lot of economic uncertainty recently for a variety of reasons. I'm sure that contributed to, you unfortunately had to lay off some staff last month. What contributed to that decision? I know it's probably super hard, but what ultimately made you make that decision? And also, you know, just how did you feel about that as a founder who obviously cares about the brand and cares about his employees?
First and foremost, it sucked. I mean, yep. I never wanted to do that. Papa's been on a very positive trajectory. The people that work at our organization are really, and I know anyone could say this, but like for me, we're a companionship platform. Like we are companions to each other. Mm-hmm. I make it a point to have a personal relationship to the extent I can with pretty much everyone at Papa. And we're a very open culture. We're a very transparent culture. So it was very tough. It was a decision that we had to make due to some of the comments you made about the economic changes. Our business continues to be very strong. Our health plans continue to really be excited about it. PALs continue to be excited about it, of course, members, but sadly, we had to make a reduction and we did our best. And I really feel proud about how we handled it. The people that left were cared for in a very positive way, which I shared, I believe, on LinkedIn at some point. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, tough, but in the circumstance where it was had to be done in order to extend runway and be able to support our health plans and our members, relatively speaking, I'm happy with how it was it went down. And I stay in touch with a lot of the people that were laid off, so they seem pretty okay as well.
Would you have done anything differently, or is it something where it's almost solely external and these things happen to businesses, especially in economic climates like this one?
I don't like the idea of thinking about would I have done something differently just in general. I think it's all lessons learned. This is my first time running a company. We've got big really fast. I'm learning myself, which I think has been helpful. So I don't know that I would have done anything differently. Obviously, I wouldn't have wanted to lay off people that way, but I had to. And so, yeah, I would have done things mostly the same, I think.
Okay, great. So what would you say is the hardest part about running, like you said, you're running a company by yourself for the first time, or not by yourself, but you get what I'm saying. What is the hardest part about running a startup in this space, do you think? Obviously, the layoffs must have been tough, but just in general, what's been one of the most key learnings that you've had since you started?
So honestly, my job changes quite frequently. Like in the early days, you're scrappy, you're trying to just get traction or do whatever you can to figure it out. And then you get some traction and then you try to really double down on it and understand the business. But as you grow, it goes from like 10 people, we went to 50 people, and then now we're almost 600 people. And so I've become more of a, you know, kind of support for the culture and the organization, making sure we're strategically focused on a small number of things that make the most positive impact on our business and our users, and engaging our company as team members, enabling them so that they can be most successful at their jobs. These are the things I think about now. And obviously, you know, growing and maintaining a margin and economically efficient business, which frankly, our business is in a really good position there just because of how our business model works. It's been like that since day one. So the job is interesting. I completely love it. I'm learning. It is a lot of ups and downs. I signed up for this. So even when those down moments happened, it does weigh on me sometimes, but I do recognize that there's an upside coming around the corner and I get to work with amazing people like Emily Hackle on the call.
So now a rosier question. What are you most excited about with Papa looking forward?
So Papa has been able to expand from the day one vision into exactly what we thought, which was starting with Medicare Advantage, going into Medicaid to support families, and supporting employers, family caregivers as well. And so we're not just supporting seniors, we're supporting people with kids, we're supporting people with their own needs, really more of a family caregiving focus. And I always knew that by building a platform to enable professionally nice people who can be deployed anywhere across the country and support nuanced needs, we would ultimately be able to expand beyond seniors. So I'm excited about the fact that we built this family support platform. I'm excited about the data that we're starting to capture and understand more about our members' needs and how we could improve health outcomes. And I'm really, frankly, excited about our growth opportunities. We're just starting. We do have a lot of health plans, but they have a lot of members that we can continue to offer this to, and we look forward to that growth.
All right, fantastic. Andrew, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks. Thank you, Andrew. Good to see you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Andrew Donlin, and this has been a production of AG Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.